This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Watch a horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Shocking me right out of my brain. Shocking me right out of my brain. Watch a horror movie right there on my TV.
Too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering out.
Hi, and welcome to another Women of Letters podcast. And it's an exciting one today because we're talking about the awesome episode, Baby.
Baby!
Oh, heavy sigh, hearts in eyes.
Oh, heart clench, oh my God. I promise it's going to be an hour of us just sighing happily and going, squee! But it will be a lot of that.
Seal claps, lots of seal claps.
Kermit Flail. Let's just act out gifts.
It's going to be a really boring podcast.
Let's just act out our favourite GIFs in reaction. That's an interesting sort of multimedia thing.
Yeah.
GIFs on a podcast.
I'm not sure it's going to work.
That might be the name of my band.
I was going to say, that's a great name for a band, GIFs on a podcast. That is an epically good name for a band. Write that one down.
I will keep that in mind. yes. Anyway, hello.
Hello.
We didn't actually. So we should start with how we got here a little bit because we didn't do a podcast on the bad seed. So we should just set up just so everyone has in their mind what had happened at the end of the bad seed and where we start off for baby. Is that fair enough?
Yeah. I was just sitting here going, what did happen at the end of the bad scene?
Well, I mean, the main things, of course, were that Rowena had taken the spell off Cass. Not before, though, Cass had beaten the crap out of Dean.
Which Dean refused to be healed of.
And so Cass is still recovering. Dean's still a bit bruised. And they still have facing them what to do with the darkness. Amara, of course, is hanging out with Uncle Crowley.
Which is creepy.
Creepy Uncle Crowley.
He was really creepy. he was really, really, really creepy in that episode. I was like, this is just all levels of weirdness and wrong. It really creeped me out. She was creepy. Crowley was creepy. I was like, ew.
Yes. So that's where we end up. And then we start with, look, I have to say, I cannot hear Rob Benedict do those lines from Swan Song without choking up. It doesn't matter what the context is. As soon as he gets that, you hear those words from Swan Song, I'm out of there. I'm just like, I'm a blubbering mess.
Yeah, me too. I'm exactly the same. Swan Song is one of my all-time favourite episodes. I still can't get through it without blubbering. One of my favourite parts of that episode is the way it's constructed around Chuck's narration. Yep. And I love his words. I love what he says about the car and what it says about her and the boys and family and the whole thing. And I absolutely adore his narration in that episode. And so to hear those, I just thought that was genius because straight away I was like, oh, I'm gone. I'm so gone. This is all over for me already. It was just beautiful. And it also reminded everybody, you know, of where she comes from and, you know, how important she is.
On April 21st, 1967, the 100 millionth GM vehicle rolled off the line at the plant in Janesville. 3 days later, another car rolled off that same line. This 1967 Chevrolet Impala would turn out to be the most important object in pretty much the whole universe.
Woo! Listen to her purr.
And even without hearing the whole narration, we know you know, it of course has the classic line that, you know, the boys were never in fact homeless, which really ties in at the end of the episode
very much
as well.
Yeah.
So there's a even without that being spoken, there's you know, a lovely tie back there. But yeah, that there's a certain cadence and tone that Rob Benedict, even though, you know, we've seen him a million times since being an absolute hilariously wackadoodle at conventions.
He tweeted me even that day.
Oh, that's right, because you saw God in the clouds and wondered if it was...
Was it was Chuck? And he came back, yep, that's me.
But yeah, he gets that tone in his voice and I'm just like, oh God.
I know. It's a beautiful narration. The words are beautiful, the way he says it are beautiful, the sentiment behind them are beautiful in a beautiful episode. So yeah. It was a cracking way to start, and I'm the same. As soon as I heard it, I was like, oh God. Oh, it's awesome.
Then we cut
I was already sighing.
We cut over to Dean washing the Impala in the bunker garage, and I'll leave you to voice your expectations and disappointment over this scene, Amy, as I'm sure they were large and many.
No, you know what? I wasn't disappointed. I want to see Jensen in his short
explain
shorts.
Explain what we had been teased.
Well, we had been teased that we were going to see Dean in short shorts because, and in some ways we did, because if you look at Brian Rose's Twitter, you'll see Jensen's butt in short shorts. But Jared had said he had walked in on the scene and Jensen was washing the car in very, very short denim shorts. And so there was an expectation there that we were going to see something, you know, tiny, tiny, tiny shorts on Dean, which would make no sense whatsoever. But I think everybody was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. This car wash scene is going to be amazing. But it didn't quite play out how we thought it was. However, I absolutely loved it. And there was a couple of reasons why I loved it. One was I thought it was an amazingly gorgeous music cue. And I love the way we came into that. And that music just worked really well. And one thing that I adored about this episode was that the only music that we had in it was the commercial music that was played in via the Impala's radio.
Yeah.
As opposed to no score, nothing else. And gosh, that works. They should always do that. It should always be that clean. It was fabulous. I loved it. It's much more powerful, I think, when you let the silence speak. But
it's called diegetic, apparently.
Oh, is that right?
There's a term for it called diegetic sound, where and credit to whoever else put this on the Super Wiki. So it's where the source of the sound is part of the scene, if you like, rather than it being, you know, a soundtrack. So whether it's voices or coming from a radio or someone singing or whatever. So there you go. It's an actual, like,
That's great. Well, it worked beautifully.
You learned something.
And the other thing, yes, you do learn something of it. It's also, by the way, to have a episode like that with absolutely no music is like a promo producer's wet dream, because we don't have to deal with all the music underneath all the grabs. I was like, oh God, this would be adorable to make something out of. But the other thing that it did for me was it set the scene straight away that when they talked about we were going to be seeing the episode from the Impala's point of view, and like I had seen all the pictures and I had heard all the talk and I'd heard Jensen talk about it and all that kind of stuff, but that scene really nailed it in for me that was how we were going to spend the episode within the car, because I guess I'd thought maybe we will go out of the car every once in a while. You know, like I wasn't sure how they were going to do it. But from that very moment of being through the windows, hearing them talking and, you know, like seeing just little bits of them as they cleaned the car, I was like, right, I totally understand how they're going to, how this episode's going to roll out.
So it's going to be amazing.
And it's going to be really freaking amazing. Totally amazing. And I'm disappointed I didn't see Jensen's butt in tiny short shorts, but I wasn't really in any way disappointed. I thought that was a great scene. I actually really loved it. And I thought it was kind of super adorable that Sam came in and picked up a sponge and did the other side of the car as they're talking.
Well, and even just the line of, like, you know, what's with the shorts? And I was like, it's a free bunker.
It's
just, I like the, you know, again, it already set up that we were, you know, these are all the little lines that we always love that you might get, you know, one of an episode or something. But this was
the whole episode of
beautiful
lines.
The whole episode was going to be those moments where you know, it's not every line is about the hunt or about the myth or whatever, that those little moments of day-to-day life, if you like, were going to be what this was going to focus on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a lovely way to start, you know, and Dean had cabin fever, and then they'd obviously been sort of hanging out, researching. I mean, it really, a lot was told in that little scene. We found out that Cass is still healing, that they've been trying to find out about Metatron and the darkness, that's for so long that Dean has watched every car in the bunker garage twice.
Well, lovely, lovely shout back, because we haven't really... since Slumber Party, I think was the last time when
we saw the garage.
Yeah, when the Oz episode, that we hadn't seen it since then. So it's nice to know that that wasn't just some, one-off. So the continuity of that was nice.
But it also gave us, I think, a period of time as well. Like you could see Dean's face had healed, though not completely, and he still wasn't letting Cass touch him. So we could get the sense that they had been...
A week or two
holed up in the bunker trying to figure things out, kind of... You know, healing and giving themselves some space to, you know, deal with everything. And, you know, that I thought it was a really great scene. It really covered a lot of territory in a very small amount of time in a super cute and charming way.
Yeah, it was. And then, of course, they do hit the road and it rains on the car. What always happens when you watch the car.
Figures. I love that. Figures. And then we find out how thin the case really is when Sam has said, it's a thin one, it's thin, it's a bit thin. That is a bit thin. Some guy just died, possibly by an animal attack. Must be a hunt.
And then they pull in at the absolutely gorgeous roadhouse, which, you know...
Did Jerry and the guys build that?
They built the roadhouse.
Oh,
so that was
so stunning.
Jerry Bonnick and the crew had built that roadhouse. We do have a look. I'm keeping... Jerry's been... This season and last season, Jerry Bonnick's been tweeting lots of set pictures, so I have been storifying those by episode, so you can check those out, because... He usually does it before the episode, so it's nice to go back and then go, oh, my God, like they built that. They didn't just stick a sign on something. They built that. It looks crazy. Wonderful. And I suppose we should take a moment to say, look, the cinematography in this, like from so many angles, was incredible. Not only, you know, have you got things being shot, you know, inside the car and through the windscreen and talk a minute about the incredible technical achievement that is, but it looks so incredible. And that scene of them pulling up at night with the sort of lights on the roadhouse and then
Dean coming out and then it transitioning through to Dean coming out during the day. I was like, wait, I want to talk to someone about that shot. Please somebody tell me how that all worked.
Oh, beautiful. So beautiful. And there were, one thing that was wonderful that was how excited both the cast and crew were by doing this episode, which was something they'd never done before and obviously a big challenge in terms of the actual filming techniques. And so we got lots of wonderful photos, particularly from the camera crew, tweeted out of how they'd had, you know, they had to have, you know, the sound guys sitting in the trunk of the car, and they've got, you know, people in the back seat, and they've got cameras on the windscreen and cameras on the stuff on the roof. And
you know, like 2 years ago, maybe not even 2 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do this episode because you could not have had the kind of camera array that you can get now. I mean, your Canon that you buy from, you know, the Best Buy or wherever you are, if you're in the States, that shoots broadcast quality HD footage.
A little comment on that. I was listening to a podcast. I think it was Empire Magazine's podcast with George Miller of Mad Max fame, and he was talking about that exact thing because they filmed in the desert in Namibia, and he said the thing was if you could break a camera and they would go to the duty free at the airport and buy a new one.
Yeah,
like that's that, because the film had been sort of in development for 15 years, and he said that was one of the differences, that if he had have made it in 2005, you know, technically it would have been different, whereas, you know, and the cameras would have been worth tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars each, but now it was at the point where, they could smash a camera and go and buy a new one for $5,000.
Yeah, so you've still got your big fancy red eye cameras and on all the red caps of red eye red cameras red, and all yeah. the all the fancy stuff that they use in broadcast television. But you can also use like your 5Ds, which you can buy a 5D if you want a 5D and just use it to take still photography or shoot video on it, whatever you want to do. It's broadcast quality.
Yeah.
A lot of people in TV use them now. We have them in our department. You can go and shoot little bits and pieces if you want. And, you know, they're small because they're like just a normal everyday camera. In fact, there's smaller versions even that are even smaller than something like that. So, and you could see that in the camera array photos. And, I mean, you know, the fact that they're able to do something like this now is because how far, you know,
yeah.
that this kind of technical work on cameras has yeah. come, you know.
They're light, they're maneuverable, yeah. and, you know, you can certainly do that sort of thing. So it's
damn, people shoot whole things movies on iPhones.
Yeah. But I mean, that was, you know, one thing that this, first of all, conceptually, you know, for Robbie Thompson to come up with conceiving the episode this way was, you know, incredible. But he also then had to know that it can be carried
it
off.
It would be achievable.
And so they needed, so Tom Wright, who's worked on the show, you know, a number of times, but also,
that was his 10th episode.
Yeah. This guy did storyboards for Hitchcock.
I know!
He's got chops, Tom Wright. But also, you know, our camera crew, you know, to be able to exploit the technology that way and work out how to do it, you know, there's a lot of pieces of it have to come together in the usual time frame and budget of a TV show. So, you know, that's the thing that people often forget, you know, they have to fit all this into a very tight bubble. They don't have the luxury of like, oh, we don't know how this will work, so we'll try it this way, and then tomorrow we'll try it another way. They have to still shoot everything very quickly and get it right very quickly.
And
so
they would usually only have, you know, maybe 2-3 Impalas on the trot per episode for the different, you know, whether they're doing yeah. poor man process for the driving or the night driving or the hero car, or they've got one that they need to take the back out of so they can fit the camera crew in. But I read that they had all 8 Impalas out and running, you know, in some form or another to use for this.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, in some ways, you know, a huge, huge production and amazing to be able to, you know, carry it off, both, you know, technically and artistically, but, you know, to come back, and so I won't stop raving about it, you know, the script by Robert Thompson, to be able to have come up with the idea.
It was just beautifully creative.
Well, yeah, conceptually, because it's not just, oh, point of view of the Impala might sound easy, but then you've got to think, what story are you telling? You know, and it was more than just, you know, we saw what the Impala sees, because as the episode unfolds, it's also, we also see, you know, how the Impala helps the boys on a hunt.
How involved she is in their lives.
She collects things and, you know.
She collects things.
Doesn't let them down when they need to get out.
She does what she has to do to get the job done. If that's driving into something and smashing, that's what happens, you know. Yeah. And then she takes them home when they need to get home. She's as there for them as they are for each other.
Well,
and I mean,
she is home, of
she
course.
She is home. Oh, my God, I'm going to cry. And that was the thing. It didn't just tell the story from inside the Impala. It kind of told her story and how she's part of their life and what she does to support them and how important she is to them and how they truly are a team of three.
Yes. Yeah. It was very beautifully portrayed. And the other thing that you know, really struck me too was you know, you got that sense of you know, this is a space, you know, she's a space that the boys spend so much time in. And I think the way the photography was done, so not only was the story about the sort of little day-to-day things in their life, you know, the little domestic moments, if you like, the way it was filmed increased that intimacy. So you really, like, I mean, you know, we've seen the boys die, we've seen them eat pizza, we've seen them watch Game of Thrones together, we've had that sort of thing, but it was so intimate because you almost felt like a voyeur. Mm. There was a different level of intimacy about it just because it felt so enclosed in
such
that
a
space.
Small space, yeah.
And
to such big to such large people,
and the way it was filmed, it did feel like you're almost peering in the window a bit and see and that combined with seeing these sort of, you know, goofy brother moments intimate brother moments, you know, when they're talking about their dreams, about their parents and that, it really felt that you were, you know, looking in on these guys. And I think that, you know, the cinematography did a lot around that. The other thing that struck me, of course, was, and of course, after the Roadhouse, we get the wonderful reveal that Sam actually picked up Piper at the diner and had a night on the with her on the back seat of the Impala.
That back seat would have seen some action.
Well, yes, and there's a long discussion to be had about how that works logistically when you're the size of Sam Winchester.
Well, Dean did it, and he's not that much smaller.
Well, no, I think both of them, it's still an issue.
Where there's a will, Jules, there's a way.
There certainly is, although, I'm interested whether either of the doors...
And that's a pretty big car. That's got a decent-sized back seat.
There's two people in there. That's not a lot. Anyway.
Yeah, I'm not doubting. Really... I'm not doubting that can happen in a back seat.
What struck me was, somehow, was no wonder these boys keep secrets, because, like, even though they're living in the bunker now, you know, they're basically together 24/7. They basically have no privacy. They've been doing this all – they've lived their whole lives like this. And it suddenly struck me, gee, no wonder you would occasionally keep a secret, whether it's big or small or anything, because
– just something for yourself.
Yeah, well, and you're just exposed all the time, and you know that once it's out there, yeah, it's played out in the relationship and talked about and everything. And I just thought, yeah, you would want to keep some things, you know, and I'm not talking about specific secrets, because often we know they've been motivated by various things. But I just thought, wow, you really got a sense of this is how much of their life they've spent in the front seat and the back seat of that car. And what that must be like. And I think I know we know it, but it really enforced practically and emotionally what that must be like to be with someone that much, that openly, to not have, you know, barriers, literally not have space. And I just thought, yeah, no, shit, I'd be keeping anything a secret, even, you know, what you had for lunch, just because...
Yeah.
God, you know, what else are you, you know, if you know what each other had for lunch, what are you going to talk about in the afternoon in the car? You know, all that stuff.
And that's the thing. I mean, there was the lovely moment early on where, you know, they did the little bit of research, and then, you know, and then Sam just reaches back and grabs it, and then it goes silent, and they're just sitting there for a moment. Yeah. And then Sam reaches back, grabs his smoothie, starts drinking his smoothie. And, of course, then we had the funny conversation about beer. But you had that little beat before there was any other action, before there was any other conversation, that kind of implied that that's probably what happens. He probably flips the laptop closed and they just sit there in silence, you know, driving along, because you don't always yabber and you don't always have the radio on. Sometimes if you're driving long distances particularly, you do just sit in silence. And there was just that little beat that gave you a feel that, you know, they must do that a lot. And had Dean not, you know, been going, where's the beer? They probably wouldn't have been speaking, you know, for a little bit while Sam had whatever the hell that smoothie was. God, it looked disgusting. Green muck. But yeah,
kale
in it for shiz. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I really liked that there was that little breath in there that sort of showed us that nothingness that happens when they're driving along.
Yeah. And look, I have to say, I know you agree with me. The whole night moves segment, like both from, you know, the start of Dean using it through to then the montage of basically their day in the car eating and shooting shit, and that was just, you know, that was fantastic.
I think from when Dean discovers that Sam's in the back with Piper and he's just so stoked, and when he gets out of the car, you know, like, I'm just going to be gone, and he's got this little smile on his face and he keeps kind of peeking like, ah! And, you know, I love that you didn't see Sam, that he was this disembodied, you know, embarrassed voice in the back, just kind of, you know, like, oh, God, trying to be small in the back of the car because his brother's just crawled in and he's in there naked and with a chick who was quite happy about being naked in front of Dean. You know, from that moment on through to Sam going, oh, let me explain what happened. Yeah, we got it, Sammy. It's okay.
Yeah.
All right, go for it. You know, and Dean just plugging in the tape and Sam, don't night moves me. From, you know, all from that, I think, and certainly once that music cut in, I think that, I'll say it, I think it's possibly my favourite scene ever in the show.
Dean, I can explain what was going on.
No.
Don't night moves me.
Let it wash over you. Let it. Just take it in.
A little too tall, could have used a few pounds. Tight pants, points, hollering down. She was a black-haired beauty with big dark eyes.
This is ridiculous.
And points on her own, sudden way up high.
One of the greatest rock writers of all time, Samuel.
Sam.
Well, firm and high. I passed the cornfields when the woods got heavy.
Out in the back seat of my brother's 67 Chevy.
Yeah, you started this. Here we go. Come on now.
Working on a nine moves. Trying to make some front page driving news. Working on a nine
moves. Next time I choose.
Hands off the wheel.
You're not even looking at the road.
In the summertime.
I loved it so much. I loved it when Sam just sung the little bit about being in the backseat of his brother's 67 Chevy. You started this. You started it. It was you know, I've watched this episode like probably 15 times already. And I have. And that is no exaggeration. And I just love that scene. Everything about it was incredibly beautiful. And then, as you say, them laughing, but you know, like just having the little moments driving along eating, and I think, what are they laughing about? But the whole it just was gorgeous. And I said to you earlier, and we went, wait, let's talk about this on the thing, I had wicked character actor bleed through this whole scene, because to me, it was, you know, like, I'm like, who's laughing here? And this is not a judgment on performance, because it was beautiful. This is because we know the men who play these men feel the same way about each other that these guys do.
Yeah.
And loved making the episode. They love the brothers. They love Sam and Dean. They love that relationship. They love their characters. They loved making this episode. They're best friends. They said they dug driving down the road together, just shooting the shit while shooting their scenes. And I was kind of like, who's smiling there while Sam's singing that line? Is it Dean or is it Jensen laughing at Jared? I mean, when Dean points over, you know, a little too tall, could use a few pounds. I'm like, it was just everything in it was kind of all messy. There's even like a little bit where Sam grabs the wheel and Jared goes, Sam goes, you're not even watching the road. And he sounded like Jared, not like Sam. And I was like, I'm all over the place. And I just, I cried all through that scene. And it was just a really big muddle of feelings for everything about the show.
I found it really emotional too, and I think two things. One is, look, we so rarely see the boys just happy. They so rarely have, you know, relaxed moments, happy moments. And I think that's partly where some of the, you know, that bleed between, you know, Jared and Jensen and Sam and Dean comes, because we're used to seeing Jared and Jensen happy and laughing and being silly at conventions, and we're not used to seeing Sam and Dean that way.
And you know that too, I agree, that's another one of the, I think I initially burst into tears just because, and I said, this has actually happened to me before when we've had moments like this, because Sam and Dean are so happy in that moment, and to see them happy is just such a rare and beautiful and wonderful treat for us to see them happy, and to have them happy is such a treat for them to have those moments. And it's incredibly powerful to see them have those moments, because they're so few and far between that you cannot help be absolutely knocked off your feet by the emotional impact of that alone, rather than even what's happening in the scene, just the fact that they are sharing a joyful moment.
Yep, I found it. I was just heart in throat for that. Because it was just, and plus also, fulfillment of what, you know, a lot of us want to see are those in between moments. You know, we love those, you know, the rare time, you know, like that scene where we had with Charlie and Cass with them eating pizza, or, you know, watching Game of Thrones, or, you know, any of those, or any time they're eating or waking up in the car or whatever it is. It fleshes out the characters, but it's also, so we spend a lot of time wondering what those moments are like. So when we actually see them, and to have sort of it served up so beautifully like this, plus, as I said, I think the way it was filmed, it really did feel like, in a way, that we were almost seeing something we weren't meant to see. It was like, intimate is the only way I can say it, because
it was very intimate.
And because you knew it was basically Jared and Jensen driving around with the cameras on the car, and okay, whoever was in the back seat in the trunk or whatever, but it felt like we were, you know, huddled down there under the dashboard, just sort of seeing what a day in the life of Sam and Dean is like. Yeah. And that felt like such a gift as well. And again, to know that it's about the Impala as a safe space too. I mean, even though we saw through the episode, you know, she's as fragile as they are, really. She can get beat up and broken and bloody. She's such an important space for them, but she's fragile. She's a private space for them to have those moments that they can be relaxed in, you know, in ways that they can rarely be, you know, and they talk about that, the whole relationship thing. I think that idea of, you know, could they ever find, you know, and they bring it up, but Sam says, you know, like, I'm not talking about, I love Dean's, like, have you met us? So they know they've both been down the sort of, you know, relationship road. But, you know, is there, and now they're thinking, like, is there some other way they can have that sort of relationship, you know, romantic / sexual relationship, where they can be themselves? And you know, again, I found that sort of melancholy in a way, because
it was there was a sadness to that. There was a sadness that Sam goes laughed at himself because he tried to give Piper his phone number. Like he suddenly was overcome by the incredulity of him actually trying to do that, and what on God's name does that even mean, you know?
And even the fact that Dean had you know, texted Heather the Hunter and she
didn't text him back.
Who
didn't
does that?
I know. I like how he sort of really skimmed over that too. She didn't pick some gap. But anyway.
But, you know, again, it brings up, you know, this is all they have. And that, I think, adds, you know, it's sometimes when you reflect on that. And, you know, sure, they've got each other. They've got Cass. But, you know, they've tried to have other things and it's failed. And, you know, a lot of the time they're probably not thinking about that because they're trying to save the world or each other, kill the monster. Exactly. But there are times, obviously, according to my count, you know, Sam hasn't had sex for a few years. Yeah. So there's that side of it alone.
And I think the other thing too is that we know that they're bonded, you know, like so tightly bonded that they are each other's world, that they will do anything for each other. We had Sam saying it, you know, this season, at the beginning of the season, you know, I unleashed this terrible thing on the world and I would do it again to save you. We know all that stuff about them, but we very rarely see the parts of their life that make us understand why they're like that. You know, that, as you say, that shared intimacy of this world that they live in, these shared experiences and dreams and hopes and disappointments that living in each other's back pocket for all of their lives in that car. They have lived all of their lives in that car, in each other's back pocket, traveling around in the back seat, or, you know, while John goes on the hunt with his boys, you know, when they were children. And so you having these intimate moments, these almost voyeuristic moments, fleshes out for us the reasoning behind why they're so strongly tied together and what it is that really bonds them in such a powerful, powerful way.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that's, you know, the elegance of the writing here is that, you know, on the surface, it's almost like a pretty standard, you know, Monster of the Week episode. Then you've got the whole, you know, we're doing this from the point of view of the Impala, and the then to be able to bring in those, what the role of the Impala is, but also these other bits that, as you say, reinforce this is why these guys will die for each other. You know, we get to see the bits we don't often see, which is, you know, their love and affection for each other played out in the most, you know, mundane day-to-day way of things. Because often they're so, you know, busy getting the job done. You know, we know they, you know, we've had that reinforced that they will die for each other and they'll do anything to save each other. But now we get to see the other side of that, the lighter side of that, the you know, the fact that they actually enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, they actually really like each other.
We really rarely get to see that. You know, we know that they work well together as partners on the hunt, and you know, they of course they do have banter and lighter moments, and I think without that we would not be as invested in this relationship. But then to get to see on top of that, yeah, as you say, they're besties.
Yeah.
And they've got all the, you know, the references and the banter, not only of brothers but, you know, of people who spend all their time together because they like hanging out together.
Yeah, because they genuinely like each other and enjoy each other, each other's company. And I think you could see all of that with all of the teasing that Dean was doing, Sam, the Samuel. I'm like, I nearly died.
I like that Sam goes, Sam,
you know. Like, but Sam's face. He was loving it. Oh. They, you know, like he just looked like he was smiling to himself, looking at his brother, having a great time, enjoying, you know, his brother making fun of him. There was such joy in Sam's, like, it's Sam, you know, and then sort of shaking his head. There was just happiness there in that his big brother was poking fun at him like this, and that they had this thing just happened that, you know, his big brother could poke fun of him. And I love that he said he really needed it too. Because I thought that was great too, because I thought that was a really real conversation, you know, that they weren't going to not talk about. He just got banged in the back of the Impala. You know, I mean, he's talking about it.
It shows the difference, you know, between them now and in earlier seasons, where Sam would have been embarrassed, Dean's would have been teasing, but Sam would have taken that as having more edge, and it would have been, you know, there would have just been a bit of abrasiveness, even not intentional. But, you know, we know in the, you know, and when people always go, oh, it's like season one episode. No, because in season one and two, there was an edge in their relationship. They were still getting to know each other. They weren't these two people. And so lots of those brotherly comments, if you like, there was a lot of sibling shit in there as well. Like, you know, is Dean mocking me? Is he having a go at me? And there's none of that now. Now there's just an openness and, as you say, they can have a conversation that goes from, you know, gee, I just had some great sex in the back of the car, but hang on, it brought up this stuff for me about, what do I want? And that felt so natural between them to talk about that.
It did.
And that it wasn't, you know, for us, an indulgence of getting to see that side of them when it's not part of the plot, if you like.
No, that's right. And I think something that this episode then has given us is that next time we see an episode where they hop in the Impala and then the next scene they've pulled up at the hotel, in our heads, we have this whole new picture of what happened in between then and now,
yeah.
You know, like what their world was like, because we've never really had that. And so yeah. Now we know that when they're driving 8 hours across country and we pick it up 8 hours later as they pull into, you know, wherever the job is or the cop station, we know what they've been doing. We know they might have pulled over on the side of the road to have a snooze. They've probably bought some food. They've chatted about nothing, you know, like they've sat in silence. They've played some music. And I mean, it's all the things that we know they would have been doing intellectually, but now we've actually kind of shared in that experience with them. And so we ourselves will carry those memories and those feelings into, I think, moving forward into new episodes, and we just have a better understanding of who they are and their relationship and why they mean what they mean to each other.
Yeah. Happy smile.
Oh my gosh, such happiness, such happiness.
So then, of course, we actually do get into the Monster of the Week case, where, again, I love they pick up the fact that Dean loves calling, making up names for monsters, and his whole glee about the werepires and the ghoulpires and the fact
no that Sam's play
not along with him.
Even cats and, won't.
You know, because Sam's still remembering the fucking Jefferson starships, I think, so.
Which was the best ever. I was trying to explain that to someone this week and she's like, what?
You know, so, you know, that was entirely delightful. And then we have when Dean goes out to the crime scene, the fact that they actually bring Cass in to the episode in such a fantastic way. So we get Cass being, you know, research guy back at base, and the whole, you know, conversation he gets to have with Dean, interrupted at one point by the deputy and Dean fighting, and the whole riff on Cass.
Love that. Cass just keeps talking. Okay, I'll say it, werepire. Okay.
There was someone posted a GIF from the closed captions, and the closed caption at one point. Yeah, Cass continues rambling.
But I love that. That's what happened, but I really love that. I thought that was wonderful how Robbie involved Cass in the episode through the phone. And in that particular scene where, of course, because we're on the outside of the Impala, we can't hear the conversation that Dean is having with Deputy Dumbass.
Yes.
And, you know, all we can hear is the grunts and the fighting when they get that. But so if there was nothing, there would be nothing. But instead, we've brought Cass into the scene, who continues to talk rubbish in a very Cass way. He was so Cass, I couldn't even believe it. He was not getting references or you know, use of colloquial, good to get you off the bench, buddy. What bench? You know, like, I mean, there was these beautiful little Cassisms throughout this episode on the phone. I mean, you know, Misha's joke of him phoning it in, but it was just such a beautiful deadpan performance. And it filled that space that, because we're in the car and we can't actually hear some of the conversations and what's actually going on, it filled that space. I thought it was an incredibly, not just entertaining way of doing it, but very smart way of doing it.
Look, the whole Netflix thing cracked me up, and I love
the
Orange
is the New Black.
But I just see that again, that thought, like, Sam's just like, go in a bedroom,
to my room.
Turn on the TV, you'll work it out.
I was like, oh, really?
Again, well, he obviously did, and then we have that.
But you know, that whole idea of him going into Sam's room,
lying
on Sam's bed.
Yes, I love that.
Me too. I was like, oh, wow, that's so awesome. I wonder if they've given a Cass a room in the bunker. Not that he really needs one. He's an angel, doesn't sleep. But, you know, there's like 30. He may as well have one.
He needs to rest, though.
He does need to rest, though.
So, and then we have the wonderful, you know, decapitation and baby with the hair, flicking the head off.
Sorry, I just swore a beauty. But I just laughed and laughed and laughed. I guffawed. That is one of my all-time favourite things I've ever seen on the show. Hilarious. Flip off he goes.
And
you hear him go, ah!
Shout out to the wonderful Green Cooler, who also starred in the episode. And the whole thing with the animated head in the green cooler, where you can hear it sort of
and Dean gleefully taking a photo. Oh, it was just
best selfie ever.
It was just gold. It really was very funny. Very, very funny. But and I think that was it you know, like all the fight scenes in the Impala were just amazing because, like, I mean, I can't, the technical, oh gosh, the technical, you know, actually coordinating those fight scenes.
Choreographed Harry, fight exactly. scene in the back seat of a car and
a
then
front, a front, from the front to the back, you know, like, I mean, yeah. Dean was being hauled over the seat, out of the door, into the door, you know, like, I mean, he was, poor bugger, he was like going everywhere in that car. So, I mean, we went over the seat, we went in and out of both doors. I mean, we used the door to kill the ghoul pyre in the end, you know, and I just thought choreographing that and then actually rehearsing that and getting that happening, let alone the different camera angles to catch the different aspects of it. I mean, it was amazing, and it brought you so into the action because there's arms flying and legs flying.
I know, you
felt
like they're about to land in your lap.
I know, you're kind of like almost like, you know, cringing and waving your hands like, ah, keep away from me, because you did feel like that. There was, you know, bits of bodies flying right in front of your face because we're not usually right in it like that.
No.
we're usually watching a little bit.
Yeah, seeing it from a distance. But mm-hmm. No, we were right in the middle of it.
I loved it. And I loved the scene where the ghoul pyre woman was beating the snot out of Dean in the backseat and Sam's chatting up the girl inside.
Counting, you're trying to find pre-1982 pennies.
In full flirt mode, and we just keep looking back and he's like laughing with the girl and Dean's like oof, oof in the backseat. I just thought that was beautiful. Very, very funny.
It was, yes. And then, of course, you know, we do end up with, you know, Dean does manage to get the pennies in the elf's mouth and all's right. But then, of course, he's, you know, he's beaten up, baby's beaten up, goes to find Sam's beaten up. He has to just about carry him back to the car.
Yeah.
And then we get the lovely, you know, Sam saying, we are home.
And baby starting up, even though she doesn't want to, and taking them away. And you know, in a shot we haven't had for a while. I don't remember the last time we saw them driving down a street with the family they've just saved, watching them drive off in the distance. And we used to have a lot of those really big sweeping shots opening up with the car coming up a big road or down a big road, and it was lovely to see that. It was lovely to see her driving off squeaking and squealing, and poor old thing. God, it better be a few weeks between episodes for Dean to have fixed her up again.
Well, yes, yes, definitely.
And of course, we didn't actually talk about the gorgeous scene in the back in the car as well when they were going to sleep and their mutual dreams of...
Okay, let's go back a bit further. Okay. Matt fucking Cohen.
Now, were you spoiled?
Yes.
I was too. I bless his cotton socks with him trying to his damage control, but, you know, I was like, in my brain, I'm like, no way would that have outtakes.
Everyone was spoiled, but for those who don't know, the Canadian network put out a promo that had a shot of Matt Cohen in it, so they did end up taking it down
pretty quickly. Actually, that was down within a couple of hours of going up.
Yeah, but
damage done. It was on YouTube.
But I was pleased that there were a lot of people who hadn't picked up on that. I didn't link to it on the Super Wiki because I just did think it was far too spoilery.
Far too spoilery. I did put it in my preview, but that was like the day before, and I just said, "Don't. It's spoilery. Don't watch it if you don't want to see it. Yeah. You couldn't see it if you didn't want to watch it."
Yeah, and, you know, it didn't really, all it gave away was the fact that Matt Cohen was in it, but people, you can argue whether that was too much or whatever, but it was amazing. I wasn't expecting it.
Do you know what? I was still surprised. Because I think I'd forgotten. Like, I was just so wrapped up in the episode that when it actually happened, it still caught me unawares because I was kind of in a whole different space and not expecting. Had sort of forgotten that was going to happen and wasn't expecting it, and I just kind of went, whoa. I might have yelled at my TV something like, Maddie. He's on my TV a lot at the moment.
And they did try and try to keep it quiet. Apparently on the call sheets during the episode, he was listed as Leonard Cohen rather than
which isn't suspicious at all.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's like, yeah, dude, that's going to fool anyone.
And he also had his credit at the end of the episode, not at the top of the episode.
Yeah.
And I don't know how they kept it. DenverCon people, please find out how they kept that a secret.
Yes. We have a list of questions for you to ask, and that's one of them, because they did good there. But I thought, you know, that was great. We don't know. Is this, on top of everything else, we have the mythology actually advancing in terms of who is this creature? We all know it's not John Winchester, but who is it? And what is its purpose? And why does it give such fucking useless
clues? Why is it so cryptic? Oh my God, throw us a bone, whoever the hell you are, because do you have to be so cryptic? I'm going to give him some flashy, weird torture stuff, and then a couple of weeks later, I'm going to say some cryptic stuff as his dad. You know, I'm like, dude, who are you? And stop it.
And is it the same, you know, is it the same is thing the responsible same? For the flashbacks?
Maybe not.
The visions. I mean, I loved all that. And the fact that, like Sam, we start off with the, oh my God, it's John. No, it can't be John. Oh fuck, who is it? So we were right along with Sam in dealing with it that way. And then, of course, then we go to that wonderful, you know, top and tail in the back and front seat of the Impala, as they've obviously done a million times before, and talking about stuff.
Talking about stuff, talking about their dreams. I mean, talking about melancholy scenes, you know, that was another one where it was lovely to it was so heartwarming and heart-wrenching all in one to, you know, see them sitting, as you say, top and tail in the car, as they would have done so many, many, many times before, and, you know, talking with the seat between them, and that kind of really wonderful feeling in your heart, seeing that they're having these moments, but then hearing Dean's sad dream, you know, which he actually finds comforting, but that really is just about his dad giving him praise and acceptance and telling him he's doing good, you know, as he learns to drive. And then Sam's sad dream about his mum, who he never knew as a child and has only known, you know, briefly in weird situations as an adult, which is strange.
And I think, again, both of them spoke to what the show's done very well, which is portraying the often contradictory, mixed, complex relationships children have with their parents. Because, you know, on the one hand, you've got, you know, Dean and Sam agreeing that this thing Sam saw couldn't have been John Winchester, because he would never say wanted to hear. No. At the same time, you know, Dean has, you know, his father's, you know, still something that's so big in his life that a dream about him giving him praise brings him comfort. So the fact that this show has continued to hold those two things, you know, for these guys, how their relationship with their dead parents has continued to evolve, their place in their life has evolved, you know, that they can hold, that, you know, that they at the same time is going, you know, dad was a bastard and dad was the most important person in my life, you know. The fact that Sam hears, you know, from the vision or whatever it is, that you know, he and Dean turned out okay and that was largely their own doing, you know.
That was one really wonderful thing I thought about that scene, that you could see Sam's desire for it to be John and his knowledge that it's not, but he was kind of toing and froing between talking to whatever this thing is as John and not John, you know, sort of telling not John, you know, that he had a hand in it, you know, and John's like, well, I did my best I could, you know, and there's like, wait, he's not my dad, you know, and it was so great to see that back and forth in Sam kind of 1 second saying something to this John whatever next to him, you know, as if it is his father, and then reminding himself that it's not, and he was in such a confused state, you know, wanting to sort of have this conversation with his father and having to remind himself that it wasn't his father.
Yeah.
And it was beautifully done, and you know, the fact that both of these guys are dreaming of a life without hunting, that their dreams don't have monsters or guns, you know.
Yeah, which is fair enough. Yeah. I was sort of actually heartwarmed that, if that's a word, I just made it up, you know, that they do actually have comforting dreams. I was nice to know that they actually do have dreams that bring them comfort, you know, and even if there is a tinge of melancholy or whatever in it, there is something that their subconscious still finds somewhere that's comforting for them, and that they're not just, dreams aren't just filled with the end of the world.
Blood and nightmares
and gore and guilt.
Yeah.
And
I mean, I love that. I love that Dean said it's comforting, actually. You know, and I really love that. He has a reoccurring dream that brings him a little bit of comfort, even if it's tinged with sadness, because it's the desire for something he never had and never got from his dad, you know, and never really had, never had in his life. It's sad, but it brings him comfort for whatever reason. And I really like that as well. I thought that was beautiful.
But yeah, that whole scene, which I believe was like 5 pages of dialogue, and I know both the guys,
4 or 5 hours to shoot,
loved doing that. And yeah, to have that long I was going to say rambling. It's not really rambling, but it covers a number of things. And again, I love a bit like earlier on when they were talking about, you know, sex and relationships and stuff. And this goes from talking about, you know, we cover everything from Sam being infected and not having told Dean to these memories of their family to, you know, what is this thing? Is Sam, you know, is he having visions, or is it just him, you know, trying to look for some meaning and some hope outside of...
To Dean being a smarty pants and all bookish. As we know, he really is. He just likes to hide it.
So, yeah, I thought that was... It was an incredible scene. And
and then we had Jerk Bitch.
Yeah.
And I really like that, not just for the obvious reasons, but it was, you know, they just had this conversation and they were, and what I really loved about this as well is that they were disagreeing really on what happened in Sam's vision, dream, whatever it was, but they were disagreeing. There was no hostility, no kind of you're wrong. It was, you know, they were putting forward their ideas and their cases, and they were listening to each other. And then when Sam dropped the bomb about the fact he had been infected, Dean didn't attack him. Dean sounded a little bit hurt that, you know, he kept that from him, but he wasn't angry. There was none of the kind of diatribe that would have come out of Dean's mouth in past times when Sam would have admitted something like that. There was a completely different reaction.
Well, even the fact that Sam told him as well. And I mean, that has been the mission statement, if you like, for the relationship going into this season was no more secrets. And we have seen that they've, you know, been really trying to keep to that, even if, you know, it's not in the moment that they're sharing everything. But the fact, you know, Sam could have just said, oh, you know, I was just praying because things look shitty.
Yeah, exactly. So I love that, though, when Dean goes, what were you praying about? And, of course, we know he's praying about Dean.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got a feeling Dean knew that he was praying about Dean as well. You know, it sort of was in his face. But, yeah, I mean, I just, as you say, it was almost like, that starting afresh kind of feeling in that car, the way they were respectfully listening to each other and discussing what was happening and not any judgment. And then when that was the jerk bitch moment, came, it was, and it's the way they say that they love each other, but it was almost like a we're good, you know, yep, we're good sort of moment as well. It was almost like a reaching out, Sam reaching out and touching with his brother to kind of just check in, you know, is it all okay? Are we all okay? And Dean read his brother like a book, and there was no sentimentality in it. There was, you know, he just was like, yep, bitch, you know, and not bitch, and closed his laptop. And the kicker of the whole scene was Sam's smile when his brother said that. I mean, it was just like, that was kind of everything. It was just the most beautiful button on that scene.
Yeah.
That smile.
It was.
Oh, gosh. Oh, I know. Oh, my God. That was a wonderful episode.
It was. And I just wanted to go back to bitch jerk for a moment, because the amazing thing is that's only the third time they've said it to each other. And it's funny how it became, you know, it was said in the pilot and like immediately, you know, sort of became a thing, even though the show has not indulged us with it. And the last time, of course, it was used in fan fiction and also controversially between Crowley and Dean, back when Dean was being a demon. But again, to think that...
And I mean, the second time it was used, Sam didn't even get it, because it was fake Sam in the in the gin world, and, you know, Dean's a bitch, and he goes, what are you calling me a bitch for?
Oh, there was the time before that in Hunted. They do a bitch.
Oh, yeah, they did. Hunted. Sorry, I forgot that one.
But, yeah, I just thought, again, as you pointed out before, we now go forward knowing this is still something between them, you know, that it wasn't just something they did, you know, years ago, and they don't, you know, it's a part of their relationship, and that is something that carries meaning for them. And it's interesting because it's, you know, just to be meta for a moment, you know, it's carried meaning for the fandom more than it has on the show, but now we get it reinforced that it carries meaning for them too, because Robbie Thompson's a fucking genius.
I know. He knows what we want.
He loves us a lot.
He loves us a lot, and he gets us, and he gets those boys. He really gets the brothers, and, you know, the way he wrote them in fan fiction as well, and the way he wrote them here, and, you know, he's written a couple of really beautiful love letters.
Well, and again, though, and what gets it for me, because I'm not a schmaltzy sentimental type, and what I liked about this episode was it wasn't all these moments we're talking about. You know, often the happy moments have some melancholy or wistfulness. We had a lot of gore. We had a good monster of the week hunt. This was very in character. This wasn't
absolutely
a sort of, you know, we're going to have a big heart to heart, or, you know, and out of character, if you like.
There was no sentimentality with it. It was, you know, there was like, it's what those feelings, I think, are what we brought into it, and what we experienced through our relationship with these guys. But as you say, you know, they got their job done, and when they were having these conversations, it wasn't schmaltzy. It was just them having their conversation, and it was just what they do. It's just, you know, it's just that we were seeing it, and so we brought in all our stuff.
Yes, bitch jerk is as schmaltzy as it gets.
Yeah, it is. It is. But it wasn't the way they did it. You know, it was almost a throwaway, you know, and
well, again, because it was done in a way that, as everything in this episode was done, as if it was letting us see something we don't normally see, doesn't normally happen. So,
you
know, there was no feeling of like, oh, we're doing this, we're having this big moment, and this is just part of, you know, I'm not saying they do bitch jerk every night before they go to sleep, but it's obviously not a rare occurrence, and, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's still part of their life and still part of, you know, how they talk to each other.
Yeah.
We just have not seen it. So that's another thing we can take away and remember.
Happy in our hearts.
Happy, happy, happy.
A pretty amazing episode. I think incredibly positive reaction pretty much across fandom. Of course, there were still people who had complaints, but there always will be. You can't please everyone, because if you did, then it wouldn't be a good episode probably. Just shout out. It was so wonderful to see how much the cast and crew enjoyed making it. They were tweeting out pictures and comments, and it was obviously a big challenge and a lot of work for them, but they obviously enjoyed it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they obviously all enjoyed it so much, you know, like every aspect of it. And it was great to see all those behind-the-scenes photos and hear everybody's little takes on how things happened. It was wonderful. And Jensen live-tweeted it, rigged out in his supernatural gear, as he does, because he's adorable.
He is.
But his live tweeting is, honestly, I love. A friend of mine said, oh, does he tell you all different things that happens in the rest in the episode? I go, no, he talks about ordering pizza and so he doesn't tell us anything. I said, not even the ones he directs, he doesn't tell us. He literally watches it like a viewer and tweets crap like we do.
Yeah, occasionally makes comments.
Makes comments. And I said, it's probably why, you know, they hardly ever ask the guys to narrate the episode, you know, do the commentary on the DVD episodes, because last time they did it, they sat and watched it.
I know.
You know, and they were silent all the way through it. I said, that's pretty much how they tweet.
And we love it.
And we love it. It's really kind of perfect.
So that was Baby, I think, an episode which will be, well, certainly I think obviously is on our favourites list already.
Absolutely.
Insta classic.
And you know, a brave episode to do for this show. And it just, again, points, I think, to how this show, it's 11 seasons in. I mean, this is our 11th season of this show. And they're still taking massive challenges like this, you know, still playing with form and taking what it was a huge risk. I mean, this could have really blown up in their face and been a disaster, you know, technically or whatever, but they're willing to push it, willing to give it a go, and they're all so damn good at what they do that they can pull it off. And, you know, for a show to not be resting on its laurels but still be pushing and, you know, do something so extraordinary and turn an episode out that works on so many different levels, you know, works as a Monster of a Week episode, gives you mythology, isn't over sentimental, but also gives like this massive gift to the fans, can be watched by someone who's not a massive fan, you know, who's just a, you know, sort of average everyday fan who just watches it and really enjoy the episode because it was a rollicking story with a really funny script and lots of really cool moments, or from the deep level fan people like us are just completely blown away because it's connecting in every way with everything that we love about the show. You know, for this show to be doing that this late in its run,
and they got
exceptional.
They got a great write up from Entertainment Weekly. The number of the
exceptional write up
cast, you know, tweeted out, and I think that's obviously had, you know, that they know that it was so well received both critically and by fandom, was fantastic.
Yeah, pretty spectacular.
And more to come.
More to come. Yep, more to come. Next week I think we've got our Lizzie Borden episode.
Yes, Thin Lizzy.
And that's by the new writer on the team, is that right? Am I right in saying that?
No, it's Eric Ciamello.
I thought this was the Nancy.
Nancy Wan, no, I don't know when her first episode will be, so we'll let you know.
Okay, awesome. I thought it was this one. I obviously got confused. They've released so many synopses lately that they go up quite a long way.
Yes. So, thank you for listening, everyone.
Thanks, everyone, and we'll talk to you next time.
You and I, we're going to end this thing now. You mind starting tomorrow? Deal.
Deal.
We'll get Cass to fix you up.
Only if he fixes you up, too.
Okay, Mom. Let's go home.
You know what? We are home.
There's my girl.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. You can contact us at wolspn@gmail.com. Follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.